The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse,
a beast.
We're told in the book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan. Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other.
They're here.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
From the heartland of America, I am Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert, everybody, and welcome to our humble bunker. We are working sort of hamstringed. We just moved our bunker from the large bedroom to the smaller bedroom of the two that are upstairs. We now have regained the large bedroom, which is the master bedroom. I get to sleep in there now with my wonderful husband. It's a great room. I love it very much. But after the setup, somehow something happened to our mics so that we're now having to do a workaround rather than listen to them with the fuzz box going.
Yeah, it was. It sounded like the mics were way overdriven.
Overdrive.
Yeah, it was distorted and bad and
like an old 70s rock band.
Yeah, but you know the little mixer that we've got here is has done yeoman's work. I mean, I picked this up off of eBay for $35.
I know, and honestly, we've probably gotten 20,000 times.
Much more than that. Yeah.
So it's given back many, many times, right. And if it needs to be retired to that great mixer, you know,
in the sky.
In the sky, then, well.
Yeah, the channels are actually working. It's just the headphone monitor appears to be going out. So, you know, there may be a workaround for that, but first things first, I think I'll try pulling out the original mixer that we used to have.
Oh, honey, that's geek speak. Woo!
Yeah. So we've actually got several mixers. Got a little one that is the original mixer that we used with when we upgraded from just plugging the
through the camera.
Well, that was only for interviews. We didn't do that for just the regular show, but we had a pair of consumer grade headset mics, the kind you'd use for Skype calls.
They were $12 headset mics.
Well, no, they were a little more than
that.
The
original ones were $12 from Walmart. I bought them.
Oh,
the ones that
the
we did back in the day.
For telephone interviews, yeah.
Yeah.
But the Plantronics set that we had.
Oh, that's right.
Those
that's
were
right.
$50, but still, yeah. They were really rickety. And toward the end there, every time we moved our head, you could hear the plastic parts rattling. And that was
no,
really
honey,
weird.
That was my brain.
It was every time I, because I recorded both of my novels as audiobooks, I had to do it without moving my head because it would rattle and I'd have to go back and edit that part out. It was really,
your
and
head,
that's a lot of audio.
Your head would rattle?
Yes, because clearly both of our brains were rattling and that's what was showing up on the recordings.
But the problem is not so much how the recording is sounding. It's that we can barely hear ourselves in our ears. And you know, we like hearing our own voices.
So if we're talking real loud, it's because we can't really
hear.
Hey,
honey, maybe we're just getting old.
Yeah, it could be. Or maybe the thing to do is the old radio trick. Just move one.
Yeah, I used to do that back in the day, back in the studio. Well, much to talk about.
Yes.
And
thank you for bringing us inside your ears. Yes, today is September 6th of 2014. And there is plenty going on in the world since the last time we talked, which was back in August.
What was that?
Little fly.
Oh. Did it have a white head? Help me.
And we've got some exciting things coming up that we are really looking forward to. And we'll talk about that during the program. We've got some web work that needs doing that we'll do between now and the end of the month. But
Tentatively the end of the month. I know on our cafe page, cafe group at Facebook, the PID Radio Cafe, if you're not a member of that, please join. We love to have you there.
Mm-hmm.
Lively conversation. Please wear armor shoes. But we try to keep it friendly, but every once in a while, you know, we're people.
Yeah.
But anyway, I had announced in there that you and I would begin this venture the end of September. It may be slightly after that, and we'll explain why in a minute. But
meanwhile, in the news, Slender Man is back. And not Slender Man himself, but an attempted crime committed in the name of Slender Man.
Well, the media is reporting that it was done in the name of Slender Man. I have yet to see, and it could be that this afternoon it was updated. This morning's story said that a young lady from Florida, mm-hmm. I don't have the story in front of me, soaked a rag in bleach.
And gasoline.
Bleach and rum.
Yeah.
Rum. Bad mix. And set it on fire.
Yeah.
And she then left with a packed bag. She had a backpack that had clothing, some water, some knives.
Mm-hmm.
And she took her cell phone with her. She went to a local park and slept in a privy there in a bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
And she decided that she would text her mother and sister, who were sleeping in the house that she just set fire to, texted her mother and said, Mom, I'm sorry.
So, yeah, I don't know why I did it.
Yeah, and I hope you two got out okay. She had been on the creepy pasta. Cheesy pasta. That's what Sam likes. Creepy pasta website and other sites like that talk about Slender Man. And I think that I don't know if she said Slender Man made me do it, or if the police are simply making a connection. I don't know.
Well, yeah, they'd found that she was certainly reading and writing about the character Slender Man, and I just recently read an ebook called Soul Eater.
Okay,
about
if she was writing about it, then that's different.
Yeah. She'd written about the stabbings that occurred earlier this year, one in Wisconsin. And by the way, that student, thankfully, returned to school this week.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
the victim.
And there was another case in Ohio where a young girl mm-hmm. tried to stab her mother.
Yes.
And blamed it on Slender Man. So this young lady in Florida wrote about those stabbings in her journal. And the county sheriff said there's a clear direction between that and the crime that she committed.
Okay.
So Slender Man, if you're not familiar, if you didn't hear the earlier stories about it, didn't catch it on the news, Creepypasta is a website devoted to horror stories. It's a wiki, basically, which is sort of like Wikipedia, sort of like an online encyclopedia.
Yeah. Crowdsourcing.
Creepypasta focuses on fictional horror characters, and Slender Man is the invention of a guy who posted originally to the forum called Something Awful back in 2009. And it's a thin man dressed in black and white, sort of like the stereotypical Man in Black outfit from the movies, but except that he's got no face. It's like just a blank globe on top of his head, and then he's got these Cthulhu-like octopus arms that come out of his back, and he goes around murdering children. That's the story that was created by the guy who invented this character 5 years ago, and it's become kind of an urban legend among people who follow it, and very popular on Creepypasta. Other people have picked up on it and added to the backstory. This is where we talked about, and I think Natalina's also discussed it on
I think Gons has also discussed it. Patricia Langer has, I think, touched on it. The idea of the tulpa.
Mm-hmm. Which is a concept borrowed from Eastern religions. And forgive me, I don't know Hindu, I think, but I'd have to look this up. So forgive me for not having that fact in front of me. Where one can create a real entity by focusing on something and really concentrating on it really hard. In fact, there are people who supposedly are so good at creating imaginary friends that begin interacting with the real world that they're called tulpamancers, which is kind of a creepy thing. I don't believe for a moment that they are actually using the power of their mind to create an entity. I think demons are picking up on this.
And, they're
inviting something in, and I think that's what's happening here. But we have to speculate. What happens when you get thousands, maybe tens or hundreds of thousands of people who are all focusing on thinking about, writing about, and believing in this character? Are they inviting something to take form and begin to influence the real world?
Well, it's like the movie, and I think we have referenced that before, the 1950s movie with Leslie Nielsen.
Forbidden Planet.
Forbidden Planet. Thank you very much.
The Krill.
Yes, the Krill. An ancient race that had been discovered by archaeologist Walter Pidgeon, I think, is the one who played the role. And he discovered the krill had died out because they had discovered a way to essentially run machines with their minds. And they had discovered that the machine was tapping into their id, the primitive parts of their brains, according to evolution.
Right.
And was creating this monster. And the monster, well, killed most of them.
And he discovered that it was because that they weren't able to, he was not able to control it, just as the krill before them were
exactly.
not able to control.
He had created his own, and of course that yeah. was the big monster of the monster movie.
And actually, this is not from Hindu, this is from Buddhism. Tibetan and Indian Buddhism is the origin of this. There was a Belgian-French explorer named Alexandre David Neil, who was a spiritualist and a proclaimed Buddhist that did some research in Tibet. And I don't know what the time frame is. It just, again, this is Wikipedia information here, 20th century. But she wrote that an adept is capable of affecting 10 kinds of magic creations. The power of producing magic formations, tulkus, or less lasting and materialized tulpas, does not, however, belong exclusively to such mystic exalted beings, or the bodhisattvas. She believed that any divine, or any human, rather, may be possessed of it. So, and she went on to write that she created one just sort of for fun as an experiment and discovered that it was actually, you know, that it was not remaining under her control anymore. Like the krill with their device, which was supposed to, be the answer to all of their, grant all of their wishes, essentially.
Well, this gets into what you and I are writing about, the rise of the cyber gods book mm-hmm. that we're working on, and the working hypothesis questioning, can bits and bytes be inhabited?
Yes.
And I believe they can.
Right. And it makes sense when you think about it. Now, scientists or those who actually know something about science, which I don't, would maybe challenge this. But
science.
It seems to me that if the brain, I think it's pretty well accepted that the brain is an electrochemical device. Ions inside the brain will move from one side of the cell to the other side, which set up a current. And those currents are...
Well, that's the theory. I think that the brain is a far more complicated than that. But
Not if you listen to Michio Kaku. We can now watch the flows of electricity. We can see thoughts. We can see – well, no, you can't really see the thoughts. What you're watching are electrical flows inside the brain, and mm-hmm. your theory is that thoughts create those electrical flows.
Exactly.
And just bearing in mind that what's the old saying? Proximity does not equal causality.
Right.
Just because the electrical flow is happening at the same time as the thought does not mean that the thought is simply an electrical charge moving from one part of the brain to the other. It's a good working theory, but mm-hmm. it's not proof. If the brain is in fact an electrochemical device, and we can, as Christians, agree that demonic possession is a real thing, that, in other words, that electromechanical device inside your brain, or that is called your brain, can be overwhelmed by an external entity, why couldn't an artificial brain, an electrical device called a computer, also mm-hmm. be influenced? As Russ Dizdar would say, and occultists would argue that devices, objects, can be charged with mm-hmm. with demonic power through certain rituals or whatever. And, what is that except perhaps putting an electrical or some sort of I'm really speculating now.
I'm going to use that as a bridge into the next story.
Well, good. This just wasn't really talking theology here. I was merely doing the old broadcaster trick of segueing into the next story.
And that segue, not the...
Thanks for saving my bacon.
Eggs. Bacon. Sam says, where's the bacon? No, actually, you were talking about the idea of charms and it takes to a story that I just saw this morning. Here it is. Here's the... headline, Last Supper, a 1,500-year-old papyrus found gives insight into Christianity. A 1,500-year-old papyrus charm, thought to be the first ever found to refer to the Last Supper and use magic in the Christian context, has been discovered in the vaults of a Manchester library of John Ryland's Research Institute in the UK. They're claiming that this 15-year-old papyrus, which has quotes from scripture, in it was used as a charm. Hmm.
Well, that's possible. I mean, we see that, frankly, in modern Roman Catholicism even today. I mean, how many people know someone who claimed that if you bury a statue of St. Joseph in the yard, you'll when you need to sell your home, it'll sell faster?
Yeah.
How many people put
years ago who asked me, because she knew I was a believer, said, I can't recall what the problem was she was facing. And she said, do you know a magical prayer that will help me to fix this? And I said, no, I don't know a magical one, but I do know if you ask the Lord, believing that he will answer your prayer.
Right. But and I shouldn't pick on Roman Catholicism, because we see this in evangelical circles today.
Sure. It's
What was the prayer of Jabez about if it was not about saying essentially a ritual or a
Here's
spell
a magical Sarah. If you say these words just right.
In this order. Then then God will answer your prayer. But
work that way.
Right. The word faith movement is the same thing.
Yes, exactly. So I just found this really, really interesting, because it undergirds the meme that we're seeing again and again, that there is a white magic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is okay.
Yeah.
Folks, it's not okay.
It's not okay. God is very clear about that in the Old Testament, and we'll go through some of that and make sure to point that out along the way as we go through the virtual house fellowship in our Bible study that we're looking forward to. Actually, it'll be about 14 months, it looks like, based on the schedule.
Yeah.
So anyway,
it may be 14 years for all I know. We might get sidetracked.
Yeah. But it's very clear that God has a real problem with trying to invoke the supernatural realm through spells and sorcery. And frankly, when you start down that path, you know, if you pray this prayer this way, you will get this. Or if you do this, then God must answer this. That's trying to do a magical working.
It is. And now, can I give you a high-tech version of this?
Yes.
The iWatch. Any wearable device, and that's where it's all going. And I go to the story that tells us that on Tuesday of this week, Apple will be announcing their latest iPhone 6 with an iWatch that pairs with it.
Yay!
There's a guy who's already put a chip in his hand to better control his iWatch. It's coming, people.
Yeah,
I just told you earlier today, you watch, 10 years from now, you won't have a phone that you're carrying around. It will be something you wear or is embedded within you.
You'll have a little dongle in your ear.
Yeah.
And that will be it.
Or it may be actually, you know, inserted into your ear, you know, embedded in there.
Sure.
Implanted in there. Cochlear implant.
Mm-hmm.
Why not?
Everything we know about future technology, we've learned from Doctor Who.
Yes, exactly. I mean, even the Sheriff of Nottingham was, you know, cavorting with robots.
Spoilers,
sorry, I should have, I should have warned you. Spoiler alert. Now they've all gone and they're, I must watch it. Now they're not going to listen to the rest of our show.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thankfully we're time shifted.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. That's very true.
So thanks for coming back.
And not a robot, you know, around.
Exactly. Although some days we have our doubts about Sam.
But let's not leave robots yet. Because someone on Facebook asked me if I was aware of Jibo, which is J-I-B-O. It's a little robot from Japan that is all the rage. No, I don't even think it's Japanese. It's all the rage. I think it was created by an American woman, actually.
Huh.
It is based on her love of robotics from when she was a child. I think I watched her on a TED Talk.
Mm-hmm.
This creature, Jibo, is darling. It is adorable.
Yeah.
It's like the Pixar, the very first little short cartoon that they came out with, the lamp.
Yes.
Now picture that with a nice round face and an adorable little smile that comes up with hearts and being there to take pictures of your birthday party, hands free. Everybody gets to participate. No one has to. No one's left out of the picture. Everybody's in because Jibo's there to take care of you. Jibo's there to read a bedtime story to your children. Jibo lets you know a phone call is coming in, or you just got an email, or hey, someone just visited you on your farm.
You know, I look at it because it's got the circle with the dot in the middle, which interestingly is also a symbol,
a sigil.
But I just imagine it turning red and Jibo saying, "What are you doing, Dave?" because it almost has that look. But you're right. It does have that sort of look. It's cute, like Wall-E from the animated
Yeah, it's adorable.
Movie.
What family that has the means isn't going to want one of those?
Yes. Kids would love it.
Yeah.
And
looks like it's relatively portable. You can move it from one new room to the next.
Yeah.
The little commercial for it shows a woman asking Jibo to help her with a recipe. And Jibo, as I say, was reading a bedtime story to the kids. This is where it's all going.
Mm.
There are other robotic entities that are out there. Pepper is one of them. Pepper is the one from Japan. Pepper actually rolls through your house. Picture a Segway with a cute little Jibo, you know, on top of it.
Yeah.
And this thing rolls around. Hi, Derek. I found you. You've got a phone call coming in. It's really important. You know, your business is calling or a customer is calling.
And once they have us dependent upon them,
mm-hmm.
then they'll start messing with our messages to really make things difficult. In fact, an example, I was sending an email to a friend last night that I need to see at the convention that's coming up for the Barbershop Harmony Society in Illinois a couple of weeks from now. And the message that I intended to send was, I will give that information to you when I meet you at the hotel. And what he received was, when I hurt you at the hotel. And
that's bad.
I'm sure I typed it incorrectly, but the autocorrect took it over and ran with it from there. And, you know, it just reminds me of the William Hertling novel, Avogadro Corp.
Yes, exactly.
About the email program, the sentient email program that essentially takes over the world by using its super brain to write really persuasive emails to get people to do what it wants to do.
Yes.
And of course, Avogadro is like Google. Avogadro is a number. So
yeah.
This is a very thinly veiled criticism of Google. And Google is trying to develop the AI for email or for Google so that it knows what you want before you even know you want it.
And robots both on the ground and in the air.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But never to fear. The U.S. Army's developed a laser cannon that will blast drones out of the air. So we'll have those on our side.
A world.
They really are trying to make things consolidate the points of contact that we have with reality. I mean, they want to run everything through a virtual world where everything is in bits and bytes. I was trying to explain some of this to my mother this morning and talking about, you know, finance.
Yeah.
How it used to be back in the day, we'd have to carry something valuable around to exchange for something else valuable, whether it was barter. You know, I'll give you two chickens for that goat kid or whatever. Then it became coinage, but the coinage was always of a valuable metal, gold or silver. And then we switched to paper because gold is difficult
heavy
to carry around for large transactions. But the paper could be redeemed for gold. And then after gold, you know, there was a brief experiment with the silver certificates during the Kennedy administration. There's some conspiracy theorists who think that's why Kennedy was assassinated. We went off the gold standard in 1969 at the directive of President Nixon.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the United States anyway, our money is really not backed by anything. You know, the full faith and credit of the United States, well, that's, you know, our ability as taxpayers to meet the debt obligations of the government and our faith that those pieces of paper are actually worth something. If we all quit believing in the paper, it would suddenly be worthless and we'd have to go back to exchanging hard goods for other hard goods. There's a new there's a firm out there in San Francisco called Coin, which has developed a card that will allow you to essentially load all of your credit and debit cards onto one card.
Oh.
And so, yeah, up to 10 cards on this one card. Well, of course, the advantage is that you don't have you don't have a 3-inch thick wallet anymore for men, because those are really hard to sit on for when you got to drive a couple hundred miles. And women, you're less to carry around in your purse. No more fumbling around for the right card for the right moment.
Wouldn't it just be simpler if it were all on one little chip?
That's exactly where I took the conversation with Mom. Because, as we know, in fact, this hit close to home just recently. I had to cut up my debit card because my card had been used at some local merchant, I still don't know which one, whose accounts had been hacked. And some 70 or 75 people in our relatively small town, 20,000 people, had to have their cards deactivated and new cards issued so that our accounts wouldn't be wiped.
And that's the second time in 3 years.
Second time in 3 years.
That's happened to you.
Yeah, exactly. So why not? Maybe you wouldn't buy necessarily with the implant, but the implant would be your identification chip, mm-hmm. and your card would not work unless it was in proximity to that chip.
Right.
So that's where that is going. And yes, things are getting more and more consolidated, where we're no longer dealing, we're no longer conducting commerce by exchanging real goods or things of value. We're just exchanging bits and bytes now back and forth. And then if that grid goes down, then what?
Yeah.
Okay. Who was keeping score of who's got what?
Well, it could easily go down. I mean, we could have a terrorist event. Praise God, we don't have one. Please God.
Mm-hmm.
But just this weekend, there was an asteroid that did a flyby that was only, I mean, it was really close.
Yeah.
It was much closer than the moon.
It was not that much farther out than
it was
the
almost
stable
within the
ring of satellites.
The geocentric orbit.
Yeah.
Almost within that. Had it hit any of our satellites as it flew by, or had it disrupted any of those satellites as it flew by, we would have who knows what problem. And speaking of satellites.
Yes.
You know, the other day I was taking a look at satellites and thinking about how many artificial satellites are orbiting the Earth. Do you know it's over 20,000?
Hmm.
And those are just the ones that are intact.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, and there are others up there that are just basically flying junk.
Yes. A lot of them have just died, broken apart. There are pieces that have broken off, various ones. The estimate, it could be hundreds of thousands of pieces that are flying around our Earth at any given time. And many of them, if they came into the atmosphere, they would probably burn up long before they ever got to you
right.
and me. However, I started thinking about when the Apostle John
mm-hmm.
was writing down what he saw, what
yes.
we read in the book of Revelation. And he talked about these hailstones
mm-hmm.
that weigh as much as 100 pounds.
Yeah.
What if some of that is space junk?
That could very well be.
Because the Earth, we're told, will reel like a drunkard.
Right, right.
The stars will move out of their places. All of that could upset the all of those satellites, and suddenly they're all crashing down to Earth.
Yeah, and it's a thing to remember as we consider this problem, is that when those things orbit the Earth, they're not basing the orbit upon their height above the average terrain. They are orbiting the center of gravity
exactly.
of the Earth.
And exactly.
If the Earth reels like a drunkard, that could basically affect the orbits of all of those satellites. And as they try to adjust, some might not be successful.
Well, this is during a time period, a very short time period, when massive earthquakes, the greatest earthquake ever experienced, is how it's described in the book of Revelation. There are at least two massive earthquakes that take place, and lots of others.
Mm-hmm.
So all of this going on, geothermal events, who knows what. For all we know, every massive volcano that we keep reading about will just suddenly erupt.
Mm-hmm.
We could see Yellowstone go off, and I think there are, what was it I saw? At least 7 supervolcanoes at various points across the Earth.
Wow.
Yeah, that have been discovered that are quiet for now.
Well, let's just hope that the pre-trib or pre-wrath positions, either one. I'll take either one. It's just out of here before
I think what it boils down to is just trusting in the Lord.
Amen.
When he says he is going to take care of us, you know, whether we go through trials or don't,
mm-hmm.
he is going to be there for us at all times. And you know what? Those events could be decades away. They could start within the next few years.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever they begin, we have to trust in God to take care of us and to hold our hands.
That's right.
Just like he does today.
Mm-hmm.
Even when all we're experiencing is, you know, trouble in our headphones.
Or much worse. I mean, if that's the worst we got to deal with,
that's what I'm saying.
About.
I mean, during things that are annoying,
right.
the little flies, the buzzing of flies.
Nipping, the foxes nipping at our heels.
I want to go back to robots, if I may.
Sure.
There's another story that caught my eye. September 3rd is the date. It's from the Western Daily Press. robots are going to help deliver meals for patients over in the UK. How about that?
Hmm.
Robots above and beyond are going to deliver meals. They're going to deliver all sorts of supplies. And it shows a picture of this lovely little robot just going down the hallway.
Oh, okay.
I'm on my way to deliver some stuff. Don't mind me.
Yeah.
And if I, you know, I'm taken over and hacked by somebody and I start killing. robots are taking over healthcare all over the world.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, looking at that picture, essentially it just looks like a little rolling platform. And you put stuff on it and it just program it and send it out.
But they They actually go in and get the stuff themselves. Everything is automated.
Oh, really? Okay, yes. So you don't have a human person putting a tray down and then saying, okay, room 204.
Right.
Oh.
It's not just a little delivery cart.
What could possibly go wrong with that?
Exactly. Yeah.
I was going to say, that looks a lot like a project that I did some voiceover work for, a Kickstarter-type fundraiser video for something that looks like that, but is on a much larger scale, something that would move loads from warehouses to trucks or within warehouses and would be programmed by a human operator. Would have to program the route through a tablet.
Well, I think the route is actually programmed, and these little robots are also programmed to – they follow a route, but they can get out of people's way. And in other words, they have proximity sensors.
Yeah, and the same deal with the other device, except that those would carry upwards of a couple of tons of material at a time. So it's going that way. We're going to trust more and more on artificial brains to do thinking that used to be done by humans, because as every scientist knows, the human form is flawed and faulty and subject to needing food and rest and stuff like that, where these robots will be our tireless workhorses. And and that, just to touch briefly on the transhumanism thing, that is the view of, to some extent, of the transhumanists who believe that mankind's salvation will result in – it depends on us making ourselves as non-human as possible, or as inhuman if you prefer, because of the flawed design as they see it. You treat your, you know, take good care of yourself, eat right, exercise, so forth, and you still probably only live 70, 80 years, unless you've got good genetics, in which case you might get 100, 110 at most, but that's it. And then nothing in their view. So they believe that we need to look to making ourselves essentially mechanical devices, because they'll last forever.
Uh-huh.
Right. But more than that, and this is something that I found kind of disturbing. Zoltan Istvan, who I interviewed on A View from the Bunker a while back, author of a book that you should read just to get an idea of the issues at stake here. The book called The Transhumanist Wager. It's like Atlas Shrugged for transhumanists. He wrote a piece about 6 weeks ago, about a month ago, which was published in Wired in the UK, wired.co.uk. And I'll put a link to this in the show notes, in which he argues that we may need to begin restricting human breeding. In other words, we're going to kill ourselves off if we don't do something fast. And again, this is sort of the transhumanist idea.
Well,
for humanity to survive.
Well, that's just an offshoot of eugenics.
It is eugenics.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Wesley J. Smith, who's also been a guest on this program and on A View from the Bunker, wrote a reply and pointed out that very thing. So this is eugenics, because who decides who gets to breed and who gets the license?
Exactly.
Well, clearly they're going to start looking for the most fit genetically. Of course, there's a belief that humanity is overcrowding the planet. We're going to reach the Earth's carrying capacity at some point in the 21st century, which statistically is not true. I've seen studies that show that, no, those numbers are really not true. The number is still increasing, number of humans on the planet, but it's going to level out at about 9 billion and then begin to decline. So we are not going to keep, you know, increasing until we basically overrun the planet.
Yeah, but and I don't get to make that decision.
But that's exactly it. Who gets to decide and on what based on what criteria will they decide? So the short-term solution in their minds is to restrict human breeding so that we've got enough resources to go around, and ultimately for mankind to live forever and to survive until the end of the universe, we need to become more mechanical and less biological.
Well, let me recommend to you a website, ec.europa.eu. It's the European Commission from the European Union. And they have what's called the Digital Agenda for Europe. One of the policy recommendations is called Underpinning a Transhumanistic Society of Supercentenarians.
Okay.
Policies to prepare for a form of humanism called transhumanism, where ICTs and biomedicine will fundamentally improve the human condition, eliminating aging and greatly enhancing human intellectual, physical, and psychological capabilities. Point two, consider to put in place provisions and regulatory measures to address the ethical challenges of the, quote, enhanced human. Recommendation three, policies to regulate use of, quote, add-ons, that is, for example, for military use. Point four, policies to manage change and impacts on individuals' body-mind adaptation. And point five, policies to prevent the intergenerational divides. This is when we talk about transhumanism and the way the future is going, we're not just speculating. Derek and I are not just a couple of crazies. Well, we might be. Okay, forget that.
Yeah, I'm a Cubs fan, so.
There's always next year. We are not the only ones. When policy is being made by major governmental think tanks that influence governmental policy, we need to take a hard look at what's going on.
Absolutely.
And understand that you and I are being distracted by Facebook and, you know, the latest story of the hack of the iCloud.
Nick Bostrom, who is the Oxford University, he's the head of the the name of the group. There's a think tank there, and I interviewed Dr. Stuart Armstrong not too long ago. Who's also a member of this group. It's essentially researching threats to
the Future of Humanity Institute.
That's it. Thank you. The Future of Humanity Institute. But Bostrom is also one of the original transhumanists and organizers behind the World Transhumanist Organization, which is now H+. Posted something recently to the IEET website, which is what? The Institute for Ethical
and Emerging Technologies.
About a an article written by a professor, Julian Sevelescu, who's a bioethicist, who's arguing that creating so-called designer babies should be considered a moral obligation on the part of parents. So parents should be given the right to screen out undesirable personality traits in their children before they're born, because it would mean they'd be less likely to harm themselves and others. I mean, we're looking at a brave new world here. You know, Aldous Huxley's Brave New World.
That's exactly what we're looking at. Designer babies to the nth degree.
Right. Because what's going to happen is it's going to widen the gap between the haves and the have-nots. The people who will be able to afford the technologies, because the companies who are selling the technologies aren't going to do it out of the goodness of their hearts. They're not going to do it for the good of humanity. They're going to do it because it'll make them a boatload of money.
Yeah.
And the people who can afford, if the technology is perfected to the point where it's reliable, it will be used to create a wealthy, intelligent, good-looking class of humans, and the rest of us
are either workers or substrates.
Yes, exactly. Workers or substrates or spare parts.
Well, yeah.
That's a whole other story. It's speculative. But
Clonus, I think, horror.
That movie was a horror.
It was.
But it will not lead to the egalitarian society that the transhumanists
believe. Which is how
believe.
It's being sold.
And that's how it's being sold, right. It's we're all going to be happy, healthy, wealthy, and wise. No, the people who have lots of money will use it. And because they don't want the rest of us to come up to their level, to be as smart, as talented, as healthy, as physically imposing, they're going to make sure that it is restricted to those who most deserve it. Which, again, is the eugenics movement of 100 years ago.
Yes.
It is the eugenics movement writ large.
Once again, there's a Star Trek episode to apply here. Either Doctor Who or Star Trek, you can always find something. There's an episode in the original series where they find a planet where all of the really rich, intelligent people live up in the clouds, in little cloud land, and everybody else, the stupid grunt people, are down on the planet's surface.
Right. Working in the mines.
Mining, yeah, exactly. Mining the substance that helps the cloud people to exist.
Mm-hmm.
And the assumption by the cloud people is that the people on the planet are just stupid and they can't do anything other
stupid than that. And violent.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so they have to be kept down there. And it turned out that there was some toxin in the mines that they were exposed to that the people in the clouds weren't exposed to. And that
yes.
was the reason for the personality differences.
Yes, but that's where it's going. I mean, there will be two classes, as you say. There will be the people, the haves and the have-nots.
Yes.
And the have-nots, as we say, will be either, you know, worker slaves or substrate.
Right, right. And when you start reading about the eugenics movement of 100 years ago, and, you know, we Americans tend to think, and the world tends to think this was just a product of Nazi Germany. No, the Germans imported the plan that was in use in the state of California.
Yeah.
That was their model.
Right.
The institutes that were primarily responsible for, or institutions responsible for funding, researching, and storing the research that was at the time considered the height of science, all of those institutions were in the United States. So we in the U.S. here have a responsibility, or we should anyway, to be on alert for this type of thinking. And yet this transhumanist movement is predominantly a Western phenomenon. It is heavily weighted towards Caucasians, specifically Brits, Americans, and oddly enough, Russians, the 2045 Institute.
Mm-hmm.
And we're leading the charge here. It's like, It's like, wait a minute, Hitler he died, we think. Now there's some theories that maybe he lived and survived. But anyway, the peak of the Nazis' power, let's put it that way, was not quite 70 years ago, two generations at most.
Exactly, but they would say this is not a repeat of Hitler. This is looking at a brand new future.
Mm-hmm.
This is clean slate. They're preaching utopia.
Yeah, they are.
They're preaching, as you say, egalitarianism. They're preaching no longer a need for resources because everything is available.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
To the rich people, yes.
Exactly. And the reason they're able to sell it and to pull people on board is because they're not limiting it to one specific racial group. They're not trying to create the master race. They are, but it's the same principle. It's the same thing.
It's open to anybody who wants to come along and pay the admission fee.
Yeah, as long as they're not, there's no history of mental illness or heart disease or.
Yes. Yes,
because
exactly.
Because we don't want those
kinds
of.
Well, the truth is that they're trying in their minds to extend mankind's natural existence, but there are others who want to extend us artificially.
Yes.
By actually uploading us to the internet and making us virtual.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's that meme. That we're already virtual, that's been done long ago. It's back to, well, okay, third show. It's either Doctor Who, Star Trek, or Battlestar Galactica.
Twilight Zone.
Twilight Zone.
We'll come in again.
Millennium. The Prisoner. We've got a list. Anyway, there is this idea that I lost my train of thought. Derailed
at the junction.
Petticoat junction.
That we're living in a 2D reality. That's the research that's being done.
Well,
I don't have the article.
What happens now has happened before. This idea that we're repeating the same thing over and over again, that we already upgraded long ago to the point where we were in a VR reality. We've forgotten we're in a VR reality. Mm-hmm. Now we think we have to recreate it or create it again. And it gets back to this old lie of cycles in the earth and how if we can just live long enough, we'll get back to a golden age.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing I never figure out because it doesn't make any logical sense. If, to use the Nazis again, if they were descended from this master race, the Aryans who lived thousands of years ago, and there are other groups out there that are similarly trying to get back to where we were. If those ancestors were so glorious and powerful and wonderful, how did they blow it? Why are we here now in the state we're in if they were so wonderful?
Except that they would say that the Aryans ascended and they are now called the Ascended Masters who are now helping us to upgrade.
I gotcha. Okay.
Again, all this has happened before.
But anyway, Battlestar Galactica. Yes. There is an experiment going on at the Fermi National Accelerator Lab, which is outside Chicago. To determine whether we are living in a 2D universe, they are they've created something called the holometer or holometer.
Mm-hmm.
It's designed to test whether the universe is actually a two-dimensional hologram painted on some sort of cosmological horizon that pops.
Makes it just appear to be 3D.
Right. And it only appears in 3D when we attempt to observe it, which is like every time you open your eyes. So, you know, for all intents and purposes, this is mind-boggling. I don't pretend to understand the argument. I was just looking at this and thinking, oh, brother.
It's a dessert topping and a floor wax.
Yeah.
It's both.
So we'll see how this goes. But sadly, that type of thinking allows people to say, well, if we're just in a hologram, then we can manipulate it if we're just in a simulation by thinking. If we're just in the Matrix and you think really hard and you're gifted like Neo, you can make things happen. No, sorry. That doesn't work that way. And sadly, every time a Christian like Chuck Missler tries to explain it, he gets painted as a New Ager for trying to take on the topic. And Josh Peck, I'm sure, will see some of that as well as word of his book gets around. So,
well, when you come out with a new idea,
yeah,
not everybody's going to be on board with it.
The Ebola. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say I want to switch yes to Ebola to health updates, so to speak. Ebola, of course, is over 2,000 people are dead in Western Africa.
Right. And
Liberia has still quarantined areas. Sierra Leone has essentially shut down. They are trying a major quarantine to try to stop the virus. It's going on a rampage. There, however, is supposed hope, and I say this supposed because there is a group called GSK, it's a Swiss-Italian biotech company.
GlaxoSmithKline. Yeah.
Yes, indeed. That has, thank you very much, that has been testing the Ebola virus vaccine on monkeys and claims that they've had great success. And so there is now a trial with humans taking place here in the United States. And I am quite certain if we've not already seen the stories and I've simply missed it, that vaccine has been offered to some of the countries in West Africa just for trials. I mean, if you supposedly can catch it early enough, you can help the immune system to fight it off. The thing about Ebola is it actually uses your immune system against you. I think I've talked about this before. It sends out short glycoproteins that are sort of like the, the submarines send out the fake things to catch the torpedo.
Countermeasures.
Countermeasures. Thank you very much. It's like countermeasures, and it helps to trick your immune system into sending out all sorts of messages in the form of cytokines, which are the communication, the emails sent out by your immune system, and they send out so many that it causes your body to shut down.
Hmm.
It's a nasty, nasty virus, as long as is the sister virus, Marburg,
mm-hmm.
which is also a hemorrhagic disease. But we've also got something going on here in the United States that I first caught a story about many months ago, and I think the original outbreak was in California. It was a mystery illness that was described as polio-like, presented as flu and mainly in children. And this polio-like disease was causing respiratory failure
mm-hmm.
in these children. We now know that this disease, which is tracked across the Midwest, it's in Illinois, it's in Missouri, it's in Kansas, it's in Alabama, it's in, I think, Georgia, it's in California still. It is human enterovirus D68.
Mm.
It's a nasty gut virus that can also, infect your respiratory system if inhaled. And it does present early on like the flu. And the reason I'm bringing this up is if you have any children in your purview, if you're a teacher, if you are a nurse, if you are anyone who works with kids, if you have kids of your own, please, or grandkids, please keep an eye on them. And when they develop flu-like illnesses, if any one of them says to you, I'm having trouble breathing, make sure you go to the doctor, because that's one of the first things these kids say is, I can't breathe, because their lungs literally are not functioning correctly.
Mm.
And it needs to be diagnosed pretty quickly and taken care of. I'm not really sure why it's hitting so hard this year. It was originally discovered in California, oddly enough, in 1962. And it, a couple of years ago, had a big outbreak in the Philippines. and suddenly it's in the United States like crazy. So I'm not really sure why, but it's something to keep an eye on.
Yeah. And just back to Ebola for a moment, I was kind of looking for a statistic that I'd seen to make sure I get it correctly. Just to give him an idea, as of this recording, again, early September 2014, the World Health Organization says that 40% of all the cases, 2,100 deaths, to over 2,100 deaths now, and 40% of those have occurred within the last month.
Yeah.
And we've been talking about this for
months. Yeah, it's starting to track upward.
Yeah, so.
It could really go bad. If it gets into the United States or into the Western Hemisphere, it could be very, very bad.
Yeah. I've not read this article, but as I was searching here, I saw a headline on an opinion piece at one of the big newspapers, how Ebola is taking attention away from diseases that kill more people. Like, well, yeah, but we know that in the United States, the average... An average season of influenza will kill 30,000 people.
Yeah.
Which is, sure, that's a lot more than 2,100 people.
Right.
But
it doesn't have as high a mortality rate as 90%,
exactly.
Depending on how you contract it.
Yeah. Joel Richardson at WorldNet Daily, who writes about prophecy quite frequently, he has written an article just posted within the last day or so about asking the question, is ISIS caliphate and a harbinger of the Antichrist? And of course, Joel Richardson believes that the Antichrist will be a Middle Eastern gentleman,
mm-hmm.
perhaps the Assyrian, and he's been promoting this view for about the last 10 years. What I thought was interesting.
Joel Richardson. Not Joel Rosenberg.
Right, Joel Richardson.
Okay.
Chris White has addressed this, and of course, Chris just had his new book is just out called False Christ, in which he presents his belief and the scriptural support for the belief that the Antichrist will present himself as a Jew. Interestingly, Richardson, and I'm going to need to do some more digging on this because I'm not sure I agree with him here. He said that he's not the first who has made the case that the Antichrist will be from the Middle East. And that's true. But he said that, and he goes back to one of the early church fathers, Hippolytus of Rome, who lived in the late 2nd century, early 3rd century, 170 to 235, said Hippolytus was an important theologian. Speaking of the Antichrist, he said this, and then he quotes some things that indicate that that Hippolytus believed that the Antichrist would be a Middle Eastern origin. But Hippolytus, and this was in my presentation mm-hmm. on Dominion Theology, Hippolytus actually wrote that he believed it would be someone from the tribe of Dan.
Yeah.
Someone who would not be a Jew per se, but would present himself as one. And the reason for being of the tribe of Dan, that it would be a counterfeit Christ.
Right. And Dan is not mentioned in the list of those who are sealed in the 144,000.
Right. And in the prophecy given of his sons by Jacob in Deuteronomy chapter 33, verse 22, Jacob is recorded as saying, Dan is a lion's whelp, and he shall leap from Bashan. And,
yes.
Of course, as Mike Heiser has written, Bashan was considered essentially the gates of the netherworld. You know, that was an
yes.
evil place.
And I think Dan's territory is assigned territory was
yes.
up close to Syria.
Right, exactly. In that area.
Golan Heights.
Which is close to Mount Hermon, interestingly.
Yes.
Perhaps not coincidentally. But anyway, Hippolytus, and this is what triggered this, and I just wanted to bring this up. I thought it was kind of interesting that that Joel Richardson was citing Hippolytus as supporting his theory. And I need to read this a little more thoroughly because I may not be understanding his point correctly. But yeah, Hippolytus, along with who's Irenaeus,
yes,
believed that the Antichrist would present as a Jew. And because if you're going to create a fake, if you will, you want it to look as much like the real thing as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Christ was the Lion of Judah. The Antichrist would be coming from the tribe described
right.
as a lion's whelp, but
exactly.
also the one that was based in the area that was known in the ancient Near East, not just among the Jews, but people who lived in that area, is just an evil place. So we've all heard about the ice water challenge for
yes.
ALS.
The bucket challenge.
Yes. Have you heard about the blasphemy challenge?
No.
This is relatively new. It's an internet challenge that is calling upon people to go on the internet, post a clip of themselves cursing God or rejecting the Holy Spirit's work in their lives, called the Blasphemy Challenge. They're even sending promoters of this idea, sending free DVD documentaries against Christianity to teens who complete the challenge and post their video online.
Good grief. Yes, the blasphemy, sorry, just blasphemychallenge.com.
Yeah. Of course, Bible tells us that the only unforgivable sin is to blaspheme against the work of the Holy Spirit. So somebody out there trying to get teens to do it because, I don't know, is this a work of the new atheists? Don't know anything
about
the people
behind. Well, that's what they're calling themselves, the Rational Response Squad.
Oh, those people. Okay.
Yep.
You know, I feel about those people the way I feel about the climate change alarmists. It's like, look, science has shown, and here in the Midwest, we've had a very mild, a very pleasant summer.
Yeah.
Except for the last week or two. But the polar vortex is a lot more fun in July than it is in January. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And we had a very cold and snowy winter. Chicago was breaking, you know, 30-year-old records for snowfall. The Rational Response Squad has the same approach to history that the climate change alarmists have toward science. They're denying history. I mean,
yes.
Jesus is, and the crucifixion is the most recorded death in history. And if we were to apply the standards that these people want to apply to the records of the eyewitnesses and the eyewitness accounts to the rest of the ancient world, documents from people like Plato and Aristotle and Julius Caesar and so forth, we would have to reject just about everything, throw out everything we think we know about the classical world.
But any documentary can be skewed to the opinion of the producers, and their DVD that they're giving out free, The God Who Wasn't There, is, without even seeing it, I can assume that it's very much skewed to demonstrate to the teen viewer that this has all been made up.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, it's based on, frankly, their wishful thinking that that history was different than it was.
Or their intentional deceit.
Sure. One or the other.
Yeah.
Because Jesus really lived. He really died. He was just as real as George Washington and Abraham Lincoln.
We need to see if we can get, Michael S. Heiser would be an awesome guest to defend the faith, defend history.
And there are other apologists out there too, because I want to talk to Mike about his new novel. His new novel, The Portent, which is the follow-up to The Facade, is now out and available in paperback, trade paperback, and Kindle. So I want to get him on to talk about that. He was kind enough to send us a copy, and we're going to read it. I'm going to read it as soon as I – it's a funny thing is I find myself, you know, gee, I'd like to take that book with me.
That's why audiobooks are so awesome, because if you're in a car a lot – or if you're doing something that you can just have, you know, listening to, you know, something where you're typing or whatever, and it won't distract you to listen to a podcast.
Well, that's true. Yeah. And I should take up that cue and thank Marshall, a good friend, Marshall Karp, who sent us a couple of audiobooks. And one, in fact, was a novel that was one of my favorite novels of all time, hard science fiction. But to the credit of the authors, it was the book is called The Mote in God's Eye by Larry Niven and Jerry Pournelle. And The Mote in God's Eye is not a theological statement. It's just a name given to a fictional star cluster because of the way it looks. Larry Niven writes a lot of hard science fiction. Jerry Pournelle does as well. And they've paired up and written several excellent novels. And Jerry, as I understand it, Dr. Pournelle, I should say with respect, because he is one of the giants in the field, is a devout Roman Catholic, but a believer in Jesus Christ, as far as I know. They did put some interesting theological discourse in the novel as well. Anyway, I read it when I was in high school. Long book, great character development, fascinating plot, and Marshall sent the audiobook version of it. So I was able to listen to it as I drove down to South Carolina and back to help clean out Mom's house.
And that got you through all of those. Came across accident after accident after accident. Praise the Lord, you weren't involved in any of them. But
no.
I'm so sorry that, you know, for the people who were.
Oh, man. I-75 just north of London, Kentucky was... Let's see. We headed down on... So I would have been going Thursday. On the Wednesday... The day before I traveled that stretch of the interstate, two trucks collided and exploded and closed the interstate for about 4 hours. There were people rushing water to that area from as far away as Newport, Tennessee, which is on the far side of Knoxville, about an hour and a half. People were stranded on the interstate for, well, four or more hours on a rather warm day. The day after, I came down there, a crane, and I'm not sure what the crane was there for, if it was just construction traveling down the road or if it was helping to clear the remains of the wreck. It fell over onto the southbound lanes, and so they had to divert us onto US 25, which took several hours. And then as I got a little further on, Interstate 40 east of Knoxville, there was a cattle trailer that rolled over, and sadly, the bull that was in the trailer did not survive. So that stopped me for another
hour. And then when you got to the hotel, because you decided after driving already for 9 or 10 hours, you were too tired to make the other two or three to get to your destination. So you stayed overnight, and I'm so glad you did.
Yeah.
You got there, and she said,
"Oh, we're sorry, but we don't have any cable. And because the cable's out, that means we have no internet either."
No! it was out because
The cable. Well, somebody had smacked into one of the
major transformers or something.
Something like that. Knocked over a pole that was carrying the lines or whatever. But anyway, they were completely without cable, without internet, and of course, the location I was at, I got one bar and no 4G service. So I can't use my phone as a mobile hotspot either. Oh well, good thing I've got the audiobook.
Yes.
So I was able to listen to that a little bit more in the hotel. But the funny thing was, on the way back, I came back by way of southern Indiana so I could take Sharon's sister to see her grandkids. She spent the weekend with her grandkids, daughters and grandkids. The book came to its conclusion just as I was pulling into Madison, Indiana, just a few minutes away.
So perfectly timed,
Marshall. Thank you,
Marshall. Thank you very, very much. And you're also going to start listening to the other one. I did start listening to it.
Yeah.
It's a little hardcore sci-fi for me. Your taste varies slightly from mine on that. I like stuff that's a little more, well, weird.
But yeah, viva la différence.
Yeah, I you know, there are times that it's kind of nice to have different tastes. And before we finish up, we do need to talk about what we teased earlier, and that is that beginning, we think, the end of September, which will be, I think, September 28th, Sunday morning, we're going to start a virtual gathering. Many of you have expressed an interest in having some sort of Bible study / church-like virtual gathering. We hesitate to call it a church. It's not. We're all, those who love Jesus Christ as Savior, we're all members of the body that is tentative, you know, that is called the church. We are the body of believers, the body of Christ. You really need to get together with each other. We're commanded to do that. We're told not to neglect doing that. And if you don't belong to a physical church in your locality, then how do you do that? Mm-hmm. Well, many of you have done that through forums. Some of you are nice enough to have joined the PID Radio Cafe. Some of you just correspond back and forth via email or text messaging. We want to help coordinate all of that and bring you together virtually under one roof.
And what we're looking at doing to start it off, again, not a church per se. We're not going to call it that because neither one of us is formally trained theologically or ordained, but we are going to dig into the word. There's a read the Bible or go through the Bible in 2 months plan that's been published by BibleGateway.com, I believe.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And it's
chronological.
Yes. And chronological in the sense that it starts from the oldest books of the Bible and goes through, the oldest stories in the Bible,
rather,
not the oldest.
It gives you a really good overview of end to end.
Right. And it does not skip over some of the uncomfortable things like the Nephilim and the flood and things like that. So those will be part of the study. And we'll post the schedule. We'll hold to it as best we can. We understand, looking ahead, because 60 weeks will take us 14 months if we hit every single Sunday, there may be unavoidable conflicts in our schedule. There may be holidays that we wish to spend with family or what have you. So
we may just get sidetracked and not cover the entire lesson.
We may
have to make two Sundays out of it.
Exactly. And we may find that we need to adjust our plan altogether, that perhaps the format as we envision it at this point might not be ideal. But that's the goal at this point. We'll start, our target is September 28th, but we'll see how the technology goes and how our other schedule goes as far as getting the website set up. We do have a website that really has been underused. We've had this domain for years, gilberthouse.org. And for lack of a better name, we'll just call it Gilbert House Fellowship. That's the website that will coordinate the gathering on Sunday mornings. Tentative schedule, 10:30?
Tentative schedule, 10:30 to maybe 11:30. We honestly don't know if it's going to go an hour. It's sort of a trial and error thing. Yeah. And in the meantime, we're going to try to set up a forum at that same website as a part of the website so that you can come in as a total guest, not have to register if you don't want to, and you can still, you know, at least read the opinions. You will have to register in order to, you know, opine, so to speak. But we want to do that simply because we love the PID Radio Cafe. It's a little hard to find the threads that are taking place there.
Right.
Facebook is not the friendliest interface these days.
No, it isn't.
So, well, that's why we've decided to do a forum. But we're not going to close the cafe. That has its own place.
Absolutely. So gilberthouse.org will be the website. The stream will be live to the web. It's not going to be like PID Radio where we record it so we can go back and cut out, you know, sneezes and dumb things that I say. we'll be using Google Hangouts to do it, which is very easy. It's essentially clicking on a YouTube video.
Right, which we will embed at this website.
Exactly.
So you'd only have to go to gilberthouse.org. You can watch it live. There won't be a whole lot to watch.
No.
It's not like you're going to sit and watch the two of us because, frankly, the way we have to work it out, the only one you would see is Derek. But,
no. Well, and besides, it's not about us anyway.
It's really not about us, but we can use Google Hangouts to present materials like we're presenting a slide at a, you know, conference. But, so if there's something important, we'll try to let you know. If you can watch the screen, make sure you do. But we'll also have just an audio only version for you to download from iTunes, I guess.
Yeah, there'll be a separate podcast feed just for that, and we'll of course post the link. Those are the things that we'll be working on over the next few weeks, in between work and coordinating that convention for the barbershop quartets and stuff. So, but rather
You're
be
a busy,
busy
guy.
Than, well, I'd rather be busy than just sitting and staring.
I like just sitting and staring at you.
Me too, you.
Sam's wrestling around.
Yeah, Sam says, okay, that's enough of that. This is getting disgusting. So that's what's
on
the schedule.
We might have a camera on Sam. Sam cam.
The Sam cam. Oh,
that
brilliant.
Would be the one thing that they'd all watch.
Yeah, you just point it down at the bed, and you can see when Sam looks up, that okay, well, that's our five-minute warning. So that's what's coming up ahead, and on The View from the Bunker this weekend, uploading interview with, who's the interview for this weekend? Well, you'll have to look at vftb.net because I've forgotten.
Do you have a calendar?
I do. Yeah. There's a calendar at View from the Bunker because I've been trying to work ahead because I knew things were going to get busy and I didn't want to have a drop off. I did post the interviews late this week. There was an interview about house church with Beresford Job of the Chigwell House Fellowship that's in Essex in the UK. The interview with Stan Dale from the Pikes Peak Prophecy Summit was posted a couple of days late as well. That's up at View from the Bunker.
Because you were busy dodging accidents down on I-71.
Yeah, not having internet connection. I thought, okay, well, I can do that tonight. Oh, no internet connection. Well, great. And so that was not ideal. But
that happens.
Yeah. There's some interesting stuff coming up. I know what it is. The interview for tonight that'll be posted at View from the Bunker is with Alan Kirshner of Eschatos Ministries.
Oh.
It's a brief overview of the pre-wrath rapture model. And so we'll hear about that.
And we know not all of you, you know, subscribe to the pre-wrath or pre-trib. You know, honestly, I just don't think that's something to
divide over.
Divide over, exactly, yeah. Because the Lord will take us when he takes us.
Yeah. Although I got to say, post-millennial, that's just right out.
I don't think that just doesn't work for me at all.
It doesn't seem to square with Scripture. But,
no, it really does not. Yeah. But that's not something I argue about.
No. So until next time, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear. A better day is coming soon to get us out of